final presenter is Mary Louise Tatum. So while working as a registered nurse, Mary witnessed numerous patients succumbing to preventable illnesses. And this motivated her to study public health, and she earned an MPH degree from Kent State University. More recently, she's traveled to Africa as a volunteer. As a result of her experiences, she was inspired to develop a charitable foundation to provide a wider range of resources and support for at-risk youth. And currently, Mary serves as an adjunct faculty member at the Cayuga County College's School of Nursing. So she'll be talking to us today about an influenza campaign for spinal cord injury and disordered veterans. Welcome, Mary.
And the rest of my colleagues, it seems like I can't escape nursing. It's like making the transition sometimes. I love nursing. I have a passion for it. But I really, really, really wanted to get more involved in the prevention in the community. And that's why I started to study the public health degree. And actually, even this was actually what I did in my final year last year, right prior to graduating. So it was kind of like my leap a little bit into prevention more so. Like I said, my name is Mary Louise Tatum, and I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. And basically is removing barriers to influenza vaccination. This is a little different from what you've heard so far. This took place in a hospital primarily, and I was dealing with spinal cord injury vets. I have no financial relationships to disclose at all whatsoever. It would be nice though. Took place at Lewis Stokes VA in Cleveland, Ohio. I was blessed to have, I had a good relationship with a nurse manager for the spinal cord injury and disorder outpatient clinic. And basically, at the VA in the federal environment, you have to reach and maintain a certain goal every year. She had already reached her goal, but because she has such a relationship with her, and I'm going to say guys, because most of them are guys. I mean, I used to work at the VA, and it's just, you can have a patient female maybe every few months. So basically, in general, with the guys, it's like she has such a passion for helping them that she wanted to still reach the ones that were continuously to refuse their vaccinations year after year after year. And unfortunately, when they do that, a lot of them are succumbing to, pneumonia and then, unfortunately, either trachs or death and so forth. So that's why we even started talking about this. And I said, well, you know what? I need to do something. Let me help you out. And that's how we started with this right here. All right, so pretty much this was actually during the 2012-2013 influenza season. And basically all patient education materials had to be approved by the, in addition to my faculty advisor from Kent State, to the nursing education department also, because they were having problems a lot of times where people were writing information way above the ability of the veterans to understand, especially the elderly veterans, which is what I was dealing with most of. So, and they had to make sure that the material wasn't, I'm just going to say politically correct today, I guess. You had to make sure you weren't putting pictures or anything in that was, that'd be misconstrued or insulting. All right, so basically, just to give a quick overview of influenza, it is a contagious respiratory illness caused by the influenza virus, and it can lead from mild to severe illness and to lead to death. Most experts believe that it's passed by coughing, sneezing, you know, all those sort of things. So that's why today they're telling you, instead of doing this, because then you shake someone's hand, they're telling you to do this now to help minimize the transmission. Actually, it's also believed, like not all viruses, but it's believed with this one, that you can pass it on prior to having symptoms, up to a week actually prior to having symptoms, and even up until a week after showing like increased fever, coughing, sneezing, headaches, or those sort of things. And unfortunately, those who are immunosuppressed are at a higher risk for death as a result of this, such as the spinal cord injury disorder population, which I was working with. At the time, when I was doing this project, the mortality and morbidity weekly report showed there was 1.4 to 16.7 deaths per 100,000 persons as a result of this illness, and that the financial burden could be as high as $87.1 billion throughout our country. Now, the reason when I put this project together, I wanted to give this map because this probably actually influenced, because the project, I mean, you're going to see in a minute, it actually ended up doing pretty well. But one of the reasons we think it did pretty well also is because this particular season happened to be such a burden upon our nation to where it was just like astronomical across the country what was happening with the influenza season. It was like all over the news, all over TV. Even people who didn't have TV knew about it. That's how bad it was this particular season, which probably influenced the reason why it's like actually did pretty well, I saw. So that's why I put this map in, just to show the burden that occurred during the season. And this is at the end of March 23rd, 2013, the week 12 of the season. And, like, this is just showing you the epidemic threshold. So you can even see, like, over the last 4 years or so, or 5 years, actually, how high of an incidence of death were occurring as a result of influenza pneumonia, which probably did put a little bit more fear into most people actually accepting the influenza vaccination that year. So it has been proven to be effective 80% of the time. They do ask you today if you're allergic to the preservative, chickens and eggs prior to giving it, which we didn't have that issue, yay, with our guys. It does take up to 2 weeks for you to develop adequate antibodies for it to be effective. So a lot of times you'll hear people say, oh, it makes me sick. And well, you know what, it may not actually be that. You may have been exposed to another virus, like a cold or something, and that unfortunately is already percolating in your body, and that's what you're experiencing a lot of times. Not to say it never does. But the risk is very low, actually. And then sometimes even if you've been exposed to the flu already, I mean, but even if you've been exposed, supposedly, like, they really do believe that this can minimize the effects of that. If you have been exposed, it would have been much worse. But it's hard to convince people in the general public of this information. The flu season begins pretty much in September, and it lasts throughout the season or until we run out, which has happened, unfortunately. There are 4 approved vaccinations out there. At the VA, what we end up doing, we just have an IM vaccination we give, and intramuscularly. So pretty much, persons with spinal cord injury who contract pneumonia or influenza are 37 times more likely to die from complications compared to individuals in the general population. And the reason for this is because a lot of times, depending on if they're, I don't know if you got like their quads or paraplegics or whatever, depending on what they are, unfortunately they don't have the muscle strength or the lung capacity to like get that good cough that you need to hack up, you know, phlegm or something. So their passages get kind of blocked with the viscosity and, you know, the amount of secretions, and that's what kind of leads to the bacterial growth and pneumonia and so forth and death, unfortunately. So the population that I end up dealing with, they were pretty much, everyone was over 65, so I had a specific population, which is not unusual for where I live in Cleveland, Ohio, but we tend to have a geriatric population more so. There was only one female, 69 males, 61 of the guys were white, 7 were African American, and 2 were Hispanic. And pretty much trying to look a model up to, like, base this theory on. The health belief model has been used effectively in the past numerous times for a lot of behavioral changes, STDs, vaccinations, just multiple things. It's been very successful, so I decided to use that. The nurse manager I was working with, she was taking seminars, and she's like, I want motivational interviewing and teach back in there. So I said, okay, I'm going to tweak it and make these go in there for you. So the motivational interviewing, the teach back I actually liked that. To have them actually repeat back in their own words to make sure they truly comprehend, that I did. I thought that was a great idea. Because a lot of times people, and you don't want them to parrot exactly what you say. You want, like, well, in your words, what does this mean to you? Like, the motivational interviewing, though, still not feeling it, but I tweaked it and put it in there for pretty much what motivational interviewing is. It's just trying to help people to, like, do more of an exploratory comprehension of why they believe what they believe, what is the reasoning behind that. And that's great for some things with influenza, vaccinations, not so sure still. And this is just... Oh, there they go. I'm like, where am I picking my letters? All right, so application of the constructs. Constructs, this is just like from the health belief model, if you guys are familiar with it. Perceived susceptibility, perceived severity, perceived benefits. How likely is it I will get the flu? How bad would it be if I did get it? And what do I gain by getting the shot? So perceived barriers were, and these are actual from the survey with the guys. Is it safe? Experimental was an issue. Then accused of action, like posters, mailing, commercials, or some of the things that they actually did at the VA. Self-efficacy, I am confident I can be healthy. And actually, what we did was, I actually had no contact with any of the guys, because this was like a project, not an actual research project, or research study. What the nurses did, they have a rapport in an outpatient clinic, so they actually collaborated with the guys and said, hey, why are you not taking this vaccination? What is the problem? What is the reason behind this? So these are the top 7 reasons they gave. And actually, there's a lot of paranoia, which is not unusual for spinal cord injury vets. I actually used to work with them, like, as a direct care nurse some years ago. So, and they have reason to be paranoid also. You know, so there's a lot of reasons for some of the type of jobs they were doing there in the military. But a lot of that is, like, it's not safe. It's money for the pharmaceutical company. It's an experiment. So there's a lot of paranoia there, which is not uncommon for this particular group, actually, like I stated. I don't get sick is probably the most common reason you're going to hear from everybody in the USA. I mean, even in this room, half of y'all are probably going to say, I don't get sick. You know, so that's just a common, you know. And some people, those people, you're just not going to convince. It's just, it is what it is. So, you know what? I didn't even worry about that one. I just kind of like, that was just a loss. But saying about flu vaccine does not work, it makes me sick. And some of the paranoia, I did address that, though. So what I did is I kind of actually came up with a tool more so, like not questions and answers. I gave, like, the nurses gave a pretest. They met with, after we received their answers, I developed a tool after I did the lit review. And surprisingly, spinal cord injury is very difficult as far as vaccinations or, you know, there wasn't very much. There was one author who was just like, she was like all over the place. You know, other than that, I couldn't find very much. And then when you get the spinal cord injury veteran specifically with vaccinations, they made it even worse. It was even like too teeny, tiny, narrow. So, I took what I have from the one person who's done a lot of research, and of course, all her research was at the VA. So it was just in another VA, you know. So I just took that and kind of ran with it. Because a lot of times it's like what I did is I just made the material more specific to them instead of saying, because what are you going to tell me in my risk may not be the risk for a vet who's spinal cord injury in a chair. You know what I mean? So I don't think they understood, because a lot of times the material we're giving is so generic, because, and I understand money. Because of money, you know, we just say, hey, you know what, let's hit the biggest bang for our buck. So we're going to get these million people instead of this population who actually is higher risk than these individuals. So what I did was I just titrated it down or catered it to them and said, this is why you need it. Your spinal cord injury vest. Your risk is this. The severity for you is this, which is totally different. So we did a pretest. The nurses actually implemented the tool using the teach back motivational interviewing. And then they, like, did a post test, and you'll see the rest of it in a sec. Okay, so I said it's like a, you know, it was 5 to 10 of the statements, and actually it was more of a discussion is what it did. It actually helped facilitate discussion more so, because I think a lot of times also, and I'm guilty of this too as a nurse, when you don't have time or you have to see so many people at so many hours, you're like, look, we have to roll, we gotta go. So this actually, the nurse manager is really awesome with this. She gave them 30 minutes to spend with each patient. So because of that, there was a true dialogue that was able to occur, and I think that's why it made such a difference. So that part was awesome right there, like on her part. I really have to give her admiration for that, to have our staff doing that sort of thing. So like I said, I used it using TeachBack and Motivation Interview. We just created a dialogue, so there's a better discussion that was occurring. And as a result, 47% did agree to receive the vaccination. 23% declined. And actually, some of the things I found that were interesting from this, I think there was a lot, like, nurses, I don't think we realize how much influence we have over our patients. Like, our personal bias and cultural views influence how we educate and the patient's perception. Because one of the nurses, she knew me because we worked together back in the day, and she was like, well, I told him, and he said he didn't want to hear it, he didn't want to discuss anything, and I told him, I'm just doing it because I have to. Well, what do you think the patient's going to think if you say this to the patient, really? I mean, do you really think the patient's really going to have an interest of even making a change or doing anything if you say these kind of things? And I think as nurses, like, you know, we have such an influence, we don't know our power, and we say things without thinking about it, especially when you know the vets. Like, they know these guys personally, they've known them for years, so they're very comfortable in what they, their comments to them. And unfortunately, you're influencing their behavior, be it good or bad. You know, so I think we need to be more accountable to that. And I was like, one day, if I ever get the time, I think it'll be interesting to see how many nurses actually do a study, utilize best practice, or how their personal bias and influence actually affects the patient and their health. So I think that will be something interesting to look into from this in the future. The constraints, physical limitations. These guys are very resistant to educational tools. Like, they do the electronic health record, the VA, you know, they have to do it, they have nowhere else, and these guys just refuse. They refuse to order their meds, they refuse to do a point, they just refuse, this particular group, they refuse to do anything. So that was something I couldn't do anything, because I wanted to create a game or something like online. Not to mention the nurse manager was against games. She thought the idea of a game would be cheesy. So I said, okay, I thought it would be fun, but I'm a big kid, so I mean, that'd be the right one to go by. But I used to work with some of these guys, so I think it actually would have been something different and would have gotten their attention just because it was something different. But, you know, it is what it is as far as that. Some limitations is, I can't say it was 100% this educational tool that made a difference, because there was a lot more coverage that year and people were actually scared. I mean, it was like across the nation how much of a burden, how many issues there were, deaths and everything because of the influenza and pneumonia that year. One of the other limitations, like, there were a lot of, like, because some of the guys, they're changing it now with the new policies, but the way it is, no matter where you live, this is the spinal cord injury center. This is where you come. No matter if you can live 100 miles away, this is where you come. That's how it's set up. So a lot of interactions occurred over the phone. As a result of that, you miss so much communication. Like, now I can look at your body language, your eyebrows, you know, facial expressions, everything. When you're on the phone, you can't do any of that. So you're missing so much communication. And you really, I think we should alter our communication style in accordance to how people are reacting. And you can't do that when you're over the telephone. So that definitely was a problem there. Strengths, the educational tool is directed specifically to this group, which I think was like 100% awesome. That was on right there. That helped a lot. And the nurses have a rapport. So that definitely made a difference also. Instead of strangers working with them, there were nurses who have repeatedly worked with them over the years. I think more time should be needed to train nursing staff prior to the intervention, because we did a quick 30-minute session with the nurse manager, teaching them on teach back and motivational interviewing. I don't think it was enough. I almost gonna say forget thing. I know it wasn't enough. I think more time definitely should have been geared towards that. But you know, in hindsight, now you realize, okay, this is something that will change for the future. Definitely perform maybe more face-to-face for an intervention for the participants if possible. And maybe do a project in the future with a comparison group and a larger group, because in the VA, that's not too hard to do. It's actually pretty easy to set up a multi. I've worked in studies before. We've worked like one in Miami University, so that's actually one good thing about working at the VA and doing research projects there. If you guys ever want to do one, very great place to do one. It may be cost-effective to personalize educational tools for high-risk groups to increase compliance. And the positive response from patients and staff indicated a learning tool formulating using a health belief model can be effective to improve comprehension of risk. Because even a lot of the guys that refuse the back continue to refuse, they still say they learned something new. They said it was beneficial and there were some things they had no clue about. So it was actually overall a pretty great experience. Thank you. I think it could be in conjunction maybe with nurses, because I think all of us, a lot of times, we're authoritarian without realizing we are. You know what I mean? Because we know what's best. We've been educated what's best. That's what we present sometimes to clients, instead of really taking into their thought and their issues and concerns fairly. So I think it could be done in conjunction, and all of us, even nurses still, could be retrained a little bit more as far as providing patient care, using in best practices, and being more empathetic, I guess. Control freaks. Yeah, I was when I was on the floor. Something awesome to do in the future, though.
The longer you live with something like a spinal cord injury,
right.
I'm not sure what complications you may have had, but your attitude toward another shock, another something that you consider to be experimental, might be very different from, I've only been out a year and you're helping me understand my risk for this, as opposed to I've been living with this for 5 years. I was just curious if you sorted that out.
Yeah, but that would be something interesting definitely to include in that, because it was a great learning experience. Like I said, I learned more about nurses, especially I was like more, it was my first time being more on the outside kind of looking in. It's like I'm a nurse, but I was trying to, I'm looking in. So I had a totally different perspective, because had I been on the other side, I probably would be doing what they were doing, but I've been thinking about it, because when you're doing the work as a nurse, it is different. Then when you're outside kind of looking in, it's like, yeah, it was interesting. I was like, wow. Some of the things we do without thinking about it, we can make some improvements. It's just like I said, we're overwhelmed. We do so much, you know, but I think that would be a great idea to do in the future, definitely.
I think attitudes matter when you start trying to do prevention and intervention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I said, we have a lot of influence on our patients. We don't realize, like I said, we don't realize our power, you know, how much, and I think even sometimes health facilities sometimes don't, but you know what, that's why I think that's an education component I think institutions maybe should provide to their nurses, and it would give them a lot more, I think, patients, you would increase the better health outcomes probably and attitudes. It would be something to look at. I mean, don't tell them I said that.
I didn't say that, though.